This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The first East Anglian derby of the season. The first East Anglian derby since 2019 ends all square. Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome along. It was Ipswich Town 2, Norwich City 2 in the East Anglian derby. I'm going to start off. I'm going to make a statement because I know you love it when I make a statement. It has been an absolute sewer on social media today. We have a brilliant football team. If you can remove the emotion from yesterday, we have a brilliant football match to talk about. If you want to use your free speech right to be David Brent singing Born to Run after Chris Finch has thrown a pair of shoes over a building, because that's the real quiz, then go ahead, be my guest. But maybe that might be best saved for Twitter, where there's already 20,000 examples of people doing that. There you go. Right. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. I've said my piece. I'm just a bit exhausted with it all, Dave. What a day yesterday.
Yeah, it was. Always was going to be, you know, with a massive build-up and the coach greeting and everything else that's been building up pretty much for the last week, but certainly after the last game against Watford. But as we'll no doubt get on to later, I think that any sort of slight disappointment personally that I had was certainly tempered later on by the Leeds result. So that did help. That really did sort of soften any blow of not getting the win yesterday. But yeah, as you said, Ben, for the neutral, quite a game.
Joe, a great occasion. And as much as I was feeling a bit sick for the 30 minutes before the game, great to have it back.
Yes, and it'd be even better to have it back if we could finally get one over then, wouldn't it? But no, great occasion. And like I say, the day turns out to be a good day, doesn't it, when you look at the results around and you look at the position we're in.
100%. It is a positive message here from the Blue Monday podcast. If you're watching live, make yourself known in the chat. If you're listening after the fact, we appreciate the hell out of you. And we do invite you to come and join us each and every Sunday at 8 p.m. We normally go straight into the teams, Joe, but just talk to me about the arrival of the coach. Ignore, please, the car behind the coach. I can't be bothered to talk about that because that's been another point scoring issue. But great scenes again, like the Exeter game pre-match, Joe.
Yeah, sadly, I was just limited to videos, but my wife and son were there, so I had quite a few photos, videos. It looked amazing, the noise generated. And as I know, a few people are a little bit down on doing the idea for a league game, but ultimately it was done because Wes Burns mentioned it in an interview that he would have said, oh, it would be good if we could get that again. So the fans delivered what the players wanted. So it was good, great atmosphere. And I think it's great just for the kids to see the town like that. It's so busy, isn't it? And everything about the football club is just going one way at the moment. And we're all just enjoying the ride. And that's part of it. Well done to Blue Action. Like I said, they really, really make a great scene there with that, don't they? How they organise it.
I love it, Dave. Great scenes before the game.
Yeah, it was. I mean, personally, I wasn't really bothered either way, to be fair. I thought are we making a bit of a rod for our own back here? But, you know, having subsequently, you know, having seen the scenes, as Joe said, you know, it was just, yeah, incredible. Funny enough, there was a guy, I was in the ground beforehand till about, I don't know, 12-ish perhaps. And one of the lads had clearly been there and ran back and sort of jogged back up to have a beer at the ground and then went back again. And he smelt like a bonfire. I mean, I think he was right amongst the pyros there. I mean, crikey, it was, yeah, it's pretty special. And walking down, I got dropped off and I walked down through Christchurch Park. This must have been about 11:15, something like that. And you could just hear it reverberating all around the town. It was incredible, really.
Fantastic. Right, let's get into this then. Norwich City, the lesser spotted visitors at Portman Road. And Joe, it's the A team here, Fadke in goal. It was only really, is it going to be Clark? Is it going to be Williams? I've got to say, Joe, after the Preston game, when we did the live show, I was 100% it will be Brandon Williams at this point. But things have kind of changed in the meantime. And after the Watford game, which I think all three of us were at, weren't we? It looked fairly certain it was going to be Harry Clark. Wolfenden comes back in over to Anzebe, Burgess, Davis, Longo and Morsi, Burns, Chaplin, Broadhead, Hurst. Much to say about that, Joe? Fairly predictable, really.
Yeah, I think it was probably the easiest team to predict all season, wasn't it? I think most people would have got 11 out of 11 when they were looking at that one. And it was right team, yeah.
I got 11 out of 11 on the Fan Hub app. For once, Joe. For once, for goodness sakes. Dave, where's my screen? There we go. Norwich, Angus Gunn in goal. Once a £10 million goalkeeper, I believe. Jack Stacey, a podcast favourite from the early days, Shane Duffy, Dave. Remember him?
Him of the OG. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Kenny McLean is a central midfielder playing centre-back. Sam McCallum in late in the day over Janulis at left back. Footmob has got that as a 4-2-3-1. It really wasn't. It was a very kind of tight 4-3-3 in
well,
the
it's
end.
It's more like a 9-0-1 for the second half.
Well, he didn't heed my warning. Well,
last half hour it was, that's for sure.
Yeah, Sara and Nunes, Rowe and Saints wide. Ashley Barnes and Adam Eder. Thoughts on that Norwich team, Dave?
Not too many thoughts, really. I think, as Joe said, they certainly set up to at least get a point, which ultimately, spoiler alert, they obviously achieved. Yeah, odd. No one really. Do you know what? Again, I'll save this for after, but they quite disappointed me, really. I really thought they were going to. I know they had the greatest of seasons, sort of lost as many games as they've won and conceded loads of goals. But to me, they didn't really have a lot. Really didn't. And, well, we'll get on to that. But, yeah, I couldn't have chosen their side. But how did you get on? Did you have a go at choosing their side or not?
I wouldn't have had a clue, to be honest.
No, not a clue, Dave. Not a clue.
But I did have a clue, Joe, after 3 or 4 minutes looking down from the Pioneer at a very tight, very compact strategy, going to sit behind the ball. Fair play. I'm a bit higher than Dave. I do think the times when Nunes and Sara came to receive the ball and they actually showed some intent to play, you can see this is a year two parachute team with, you know, good technical players that should be able to go toe-to-toe with us. But, and I'm not getting into the slide digs, I think this is an objective fact, Joe, and it's a big compliment to us as a newly promoted League One team, that it was very much, you're going to sit behind the ball, try and get some crosses in, try and get some the big guys up for set plays, a few long throws into the box and manage the game that way. And that was apparent to me after 3 or 4 minutes, Joe.
Yeah, it was almost like one of those League One games last year, wasn't it? The way they set up, it's probably the most limited setup we've had against us this season at Portman Road, the team that's come to do the least sort of in an attacking sense. And I'd say they didn't even do it very well, really, in the first half, did they, with how much we were still able to create, considering how much they were sitting back. But no, it was, I think, without sort of being a dig at Norwich, it's a bit embarrassing, really, isn't it? That's a sort of a team still in receipt of parachute payments is coming away to a newly promoted side and having to play like that. It sort of just shows how far we've come as a side, that we are now a top championship side, aren't we? And they are very much a team probably about to go into sort of into transition again, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nod to us, really, isn't it? It surely is a real nod to us and the start we've had. Whether that had come to us anyway without the had they not been on the back of this 14-year non-losing run and played any differently, I don't know.
There you go. Joe, I thought we played really well for 25 minutes, and we are in a moment, or certainly since Valentine's to February the 15th, where we've won every one of these games where we've kind of played well, and for once the finishing, I think Nathan Broadhead's two shots were about I've watched them both back now, were about a combined foot if you had the distance together. I mean, you've had a great view around that left-hand post of Angus Gunn, Wes Burns, wow, slashed one wide. And for once, we weren't clinical, Joe.
No, and especially Broadhead. Because he missed that big chance against Coventry, wasn't it? In the last game where he went through on goal and just dragged it wide. And this one, it's difficult to criticise because he makes a chance for himself out of nothing, doesn't he? He's on the edge of the box. His body's going. He does it absolutely brilliantly. But from the moment it leaves his foot, it looks in, and then it just goes the wrong side of the post. The second one, sort of watched that back on the TV, and it's a more difficult chance than it looked at the time. It goes wide, but you think you've got to score one of those. Even the Wes Burns chance where he fires that over, he should have hit the target there, and he normally does. He's normally a very sort of composed in those situations, but doesn't. But the goal finally does come from the corner, second phase from a corner, isn't it, where George Hurst does sort of brilliantly. And well, Luongo first wins the first header back in. George Hurst sort of nods it down to Broadhead, who smashes it home. He couldn't miss that one. And that's now six assists for the season for George Hurst. And it was felt a big moment. And it was fully deserved more than deserved it was, wasn't it, at that stage?
What's your take on the first sort of 25? I don't know, can't exactly tell you what time the goal was, Dave. Oh, 34. In the end, just talk me up to the goal, and
as Joe quite rightly said, you know, as everyone said, you've missed those three good chances. I mean, the first one, what they call gilt-edged. Well, certainly the first one was. He does so well, doesn't he? Drops his shoulder, faints. To be fair, the second one, and watching it back, the defender sort of just throws himself to the ground, really. Doesn't even drops his shoulder. He just, I don't know what he thinks, really. And from where I am, that's in. And of course, you know, just can't believe it's just drifted wide. The second one, as Joe said, maybe he's leaning back a little bit. And again, perhaps should put that in. And Burns, you're quite right, usually he's going to hit those on target, that goes in the roof of the net. So, you know, and everyone around is not getting anxious, but saying, yeah, we'll regret that. And then you say, well, no, we won't, because we'll create more, you know, obviously. And we did from the set play. But I think one of those goals going, certainly Broadhead's first one, where he beats the players, that goes in. I think that just sets the tone for the rest of the game, and we probably be two or three up at half time, probably.
Dave, we know you can score against Ipswich at Portman Road. A frustrating goal. If Johnny Rowe had put it in from a brilliant cross by McCallum for the first one, you hold your hands up and say, okay, fine, good goal, well played. Stacey, I'm going to quote David Diamond, just puts it in an area. let me finish, Dave. We can whine and moan that VAR would have probably found an inch of Johnny Rowe laying on the floor offside, can't we? But is what it is. And it's a good finish at the back post, but so disappointing, Dave, not to be going in the lead.
It's a lucky goal. It's a bit lucky. Yes, it's certainly offside. It's a great cross in the first stage. You're so right, from McCullum. Brilliant cross. So I thought played Burns certainly early on quite well. Really, really did, considering he was sort of thrown in yesterday. And I suppose looking back at it, Stacey does quite well to dig that ball out, doesn't he? Could Broadhead do more there to stop the cross? I don't know. And as you see, normally those loopy cross comes in, you think, oh, that's okay, you know, we'll deal with that. Gets a bit lucky because the ball kind of falls into no man's land, doesn't it? And Rowe's only just getting up. It's really odd. When the cross ball's sort of coming overhanging, Rowe's only getting up from the diving header. Decent effort, a sort of scissor volley. The scissor volley, and it just falls perfectly for him. It bounces off. I don't know, Wolfenden can't react. It just bounces off Wolfenden. And it is a good finish. He picks himself up again, and perhaps a lot of forwards would just lash it there and lash it over. But it's quite a controlled finish, and yeah, almost out of nothing, was it? Pretty disappointing. But could you say bad defence? I don't know, really. It's just a bit fortunate, I'd say, that goal. And certainly from the in the second phase, Rowe is offside. But yeah.
What I would say to Dave's point there, Joe, when you get moved from one side to the other, back to the other, you're never really very well set. You're kind of chasing your tail after the first cross goes over. I suppose Rowe needs some credit. He takes a second chance well, doesn't he, Joe?
Yeah, no, it's a good finish, isn't he? He's alert. It's sort of about the only place he can score, and he puts it in an unsafe position. It's a good goal, isn't it? It's, to be honest. But I think there was an incident in the build-up to it where... It's one of those ones where the ref kept letting a lot go, and I think there was a foul, and I think we just hadn't... Either we played the advantages, because he played about four advantages where we didn't really seem to have any advantage from it, and I think there was one of those in the build-up to it, and we just seemed like we'd been knocked off our spot at that point, and we just didn't quite recover from it through the whole run. We were sort of chasing our tails through the whole run there because of the sort of failure to award us a free kick and stop the game, effectively.
I think McKenna was making that point to the fourth official after the goal went in, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't have a problem with the referee, and especially given if he booked Barnes for clattering Flagg, he probably would have had to book Morsi for clattering Barnes later in the game, and then we would have missed him for the Leeds and Leicester game. So I agree with the advantages. A couple of times I got frustrated. Joe, they always say play the occasion, play the game, not the occasion. It felt like he refereed the occasion, not the game, didn't he, Joe?
Yeah, I think it was Jack in the Telegram group made a good point, effectively, that like the ref was consistent. I'll give him that. Like he was the same for both sides. But I think he basically, sort of Jack in the group said, effectively, if you're Norwich for this game and you want to pick how the ref is going to ref the game, you would pick that ref there because we're so much better than them. It gave them the sort of puncher's chance by letting Moore go, doing that. Where if he'd have been a very officious referee and consistent, it would have been much more in our favour because they were the ones chasing us around most of the game, kicking us and giving away what would be fouls normally. But like I say, the ref, like I say, he was consistent. He had a fine game, but I don't think he helped us in any way. I think that approach helped them rather than it helped us.
No. Dave, I saw you at halftime, and the absolute worst possible thing that could have happened at the start of the second half. And I say this every time about George Hurst. He's in Ipswich Town folklore now after the goal against Barnsley, but he's caught turning his back, watching the player, not the ball, from not even a very good long throw in. Rowe hits the shot nice and early, through a couple of players and through Hladke. A really poor goal, Dave, at a horrible time to concede.
It's just a bit weak. And whether it was every single set play, every single corner, the ref was perhaps talking to either him or perhaps Wolfen, whoever was up, and the Norwich. I don't think it was perhaps one corner taken yesterday where the ref wasn't saying, look, you know, wasn't going to the players and saying, look, you know, stop it, I'm watching. No pulling, no shoving, you know, no shirt pulling. And maybe, do you think, maybe perhaps he was a bit wary of that, but you're right, it wasn't a long, flat, Rory Delap throw, it was like a loopy throw. And he kind of gets caught under the ball. He's a bit weak, isn't he? He's weak, and it's Duffy, isn't it? Duffy, or something, even lays it down, I think. Again, they get tad fortunate there. He just gets a bit on the ball. Again, Rowe, you got to say, really alert, first time finish, slight deflection, is it, off Davis? And I think props to Hladke. Yes, it goes through him, but he's unsighted, won by Davis. I think Luongo goes pretty much in front of him. And certainly at
so,
the left
so
corner.
So is Ashley Barnes in an offside
certainly
position.
At the left corner of his eye, certain Ashley Barnes, who's literally about 3 yards from goal. So I think, VAR might well have had a look at that one. But, yeah, overall, yeah, really disappointing goal. It's just, yeah, I think Hurst is more weak than anything, really.
Joe, unfortunately, it's going to fall to you to give Rowe some credit again. He had four touches in our box yesterday and scored twice.
Yeah, and he didn't really do a lot in the game, did he?
No, isn't that the sign of a good player, though, Joe?
Because I think there was something, I think someone noted he only completed something like 3 passes in the whole game. He just did not get on the ball at all. But he comes away with 2 goals and earns them a point. So, yeah, you can't sort of criticise him. But I think we played him pretty well, to be fair. It's just he didn't really offer anything apart from apart from when it matters. But that's football, isn't it?
That is very much football. Joe, do you want to take us up to... Do you know what? I thought we scored probably, I don't want to say our worst spell of the... I thought we were huffing and puffing when we scored. And I thought it was a really good goal and a really good finish rather than, you know, in the first half, we were really taking it to them. But I don't want to say against the run of play because it wasn't. But do you take the point I'm trying to make?
Yeah, I don't think we played at our fluent best much in the second half. There wasn't many periods where we actually had... We had a lot of decent possession in there, but they were sort of very... Well, they were just so deep, weren't they, in defensive. It was hard to break down. And obviously, I'm in the South Stand, so it's hard to tell at that end exactly what's going on. But we didn't seem to create a huge amount. But the goal's good, isn't it? It's Sam Morsey, as he did so many times, he really dominated that midfield yesterday. And
very good,
he wins the ball back, doesn't he? Plays it to... Let's go to Broadhead first and then to Chaplin. And Chaplin lays it off to Burns. There's a lot of work to do, but he takes the shot really early, does well, and sort of through the defender's leg, keeper doesn't move, and it's sort of right in the corner. A brilliant finish from Burns. And as he normally does in the big games, he tends to come up with goals in the big games, doesn't he, Wes Burns? And we just did. And then from that point, you thought, oh, here we go. We're going to drive on from here and win the game. Sort of, it almost felt like after the celebration, it wasn't a wild celebration. It was almost like, come on, yep, goal. Now we go and win this sort of thing, as opposed to going mad. But I don't know, just after that, we just huffed and puffed without really... I don't think we did enough to win it from that point on, personally.
No, I agree with Joe, Dave. We've seen Ipswich blow up a little bit in second halves at Portman Road, run out of steam, but already having put 2 or 3 goals on the board by the hour mark. So I would actually concur. And this is where, you know, if you look at, say, the parachute teams, they've got equivalent subs to, you know, to bring in and keep that intensity up, haven't they? But it didn't really happen in the last 30 minutes, did it?
No, not really. As Joe said, we had a lot of good possession in there. I mean, they barely got out of there, let alone in our box, other than a free kick right in the end. They barely got out of their half. But look, they sat in and were compact and well-organised, and fair play to them. You know, it's you threw the gauntlet down to us. Okay, like, come and play through us now for the winning goal. And certainly the subs really didn't have much of an impact. I thought Hutchinson was disappointing. To be fair to him, they doubled up and played Hutchinson pretty well. He did get in some good positions, but he really wasn't too effective. And, you know, really the other subs, other chance.
Really late as well, weren't they, Dave?
Quite late, yeah. It's like 78, first one, I think, something like that. The only other bit of play, great bit of play from Broadhead, drops his shoulder, gets it out of his feet. That was a better save than I thought at the time. I thought,
his top hand for, Dave.
Yeah, really, the really cameras. Good save. Yeah, very, very good save. That was going right in the far corner. So that was a good save. But look, you know, fair play to them. They sat behind the ball and were compact and, celebrated their point quite wildly and enthusiastically. At the end, yeah, I've got to say it's perhaps one of the more exuberant celebrations I've seen since bloody hell. West Ham beat us in the second leg of the playoffs, I think.
But let's not get into the point scoring on.
No. Look, I know, and I get it. Look, I get it. I totally get it. You know, they're not really having the greatest of seasons. Well, we're saying they're not having the greatest of seasons. They're 5 points off the playoff. That was the thing for them with a sort of a slight not dig at them, a slight comment about them. You know. You'd think at 2-2, they'd have a bit more of a go. You know, they're 3 points off the playoffs going into it yesterday. You'd have thought they'd have had a bit more of a go. But, you know, obviously that 14-15-year thing is quite highly valued. And fair play, it'd be the same if it was the other way around, I guess.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you look at it and it does feel like the natural order has very much been restored in East Anglia, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it just felt very, very different because, let's be honest, we haven't had a hope in a lot of the Derby games. They've had better teams, you know, better players than us, been sort of either about to get promoted or just having been relegated. And, you know, whether it's the natural order or not is not for me to say. Football goes in cycles, doesn't it? And it's certainly been their cycle for a while, but it did feel nice not to be going, you know, it felt a reversal. Like Mick, I think Rich was saying in the chat there, Mick used to send us to Norwich like that, you know, to not give anything away and try and nick a goal. And that's six draws in the last nine of these. Joe, you know, these are objective facts, these numbers at 65% possession, 2.07 to 0.81. It's 18 shots. It's two big chances. It's a game that normally with those numbers we win, Joe, isn't it?
Yeah, like I say, we were the better side there by distance. We are just miles better than them at the moment. I know the game ended a draw, but when you look at the two teams, we're just a levels above them at the moment. And it's frustrating. We didn't get the win because of that. But like I say, when you look at their team and you see someone like Sarah in midfield, it costs more than our whole squad. And you think, how on earth have they sort of fallen so badly? Because they were quite a well-run club for a number of years, did well, came down, always looked a good side. And it's like, at this point last year, they were sort of in the playoffs and we were third in League One. And now, how on earth has it turned? So we're so far ahead of them now. But
he was just non-existent. I didn't even realise he was playing. I barely realised he was playing. He's got quite obviously distinctive hair. But other than that, he was just non-existent, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was expecting a lot from him.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I thought by distance, Duffy was their best player.
I thought McCallum got a bit of a going over in the first half and did really well.
He's one that was lucky with how the referee ref the game as well, though.
Possibly.
I think he was really trying to keep up with Wes Burns and struggling.
I thought Duffy, when you know when we did get the ball in the box, Duffy was winning most. It was him that made that brilliant block. Fairly, not say early on, just before we scored from, or just before the broadhead miss from Burns sort of ball across the box. Brilliant. I thought he was, considering, I'd say we're giving him so much stick over the years, haven't we? Well, back in the day, yeah, when he was the own goal king, wasn't he? But no, I thought, yeah, he was really good yesterday.
You know, from my vantage point up in the Pioneer, the most important job I saw being done was Ashley Barnes, when they didn't have the ball, dropping in behind the striker, pulling everyone in to get the get the team shape. Yeah,
I thought he was awful though. Actually, like,
but in terms
football,
of
in that,
no, you're
in
right.
In terms
you're
of
right.
the organizing leadership job that he had to do, didn't he?
Yep.
So there you go. It is what it is, and it's a 2-2 draw. And I think we've got through that fairly sort of objectively, haven't we? And on the other side of this, we'll go into the rest of the weekend's action. But first, a word from our sponsors at Innovation Labs.
Innovation Labs is business hub and co-working space with strategic locations across Suffolk. Our aim is to foster innovation, entrepreneurship, business growth, and the development of an AI centre of excellence in Suffolk. Monthly hot desks are available from just £79. For more info, head to innovationlabsgroup.com or contact info@innovationlabsgroup.com. Innovation Labs, providing support for businesses across Suffolk. Locations in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, Woodbridge, with more.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Follow. You'll have plenty of chance, guys, to have your say on the game at the weekend in the question segment. So I'm sure we'll come back around to that. But first of all, we will just do a couple of quick notes. ITFC women attracted girls into the fourth round of the Women's FA Cup after a strong team performance and an excellent win over Championship side Lewis. Kira Robertson scored a worldie, her first for Town. Is that a first goal or a first worldie, Rich?
First goal.
To set the Blues, start as you mean to go on. On the way, Lena Gunning-Williams and Ruby Doe added goals either side of halftime to help Town secure a home tie against another Championship side. Charlton, we are still doing the Christmas giveaway, which is ramping up. You can have a look at our socials to see what you can win there. I think we're onto the second tier of it now. So if people keep getting involved over on the socials, an Ipswich Town shirt will be given away. And by the way, Lucy O'Brien, congratulations. We sponsor her through the podcast, made her 50th appearance for the Ipswich Town women today. Right, let's dive in to the rest of the action in the Championship. And I'm sure one particular result will be picked out by the guys, but I'll rattle through and you can pick out whatever you see fit. So it was Bristol City 1, Sunderland 0, Hull 3, Cardiff 0, Hull into 6th, and looking like they're going to be there at the halfway point.
A new contract for Liam Rossini.
And indeed, a new contract for Liam Rossini. Leeds 1, Coventry 1 was a big bonus. We could have gone down to 8 points, couldn't we? And then with the head-to-head coming up, that could have been problematic. Leeds, 1 point in the last two games. Millwall 1, Huddersfield 1 down at the bottom. Plymouth 3, Rotherham 2, rock bottom now Rotherham. We said we thought Watford were quite good on Tuesday, didn't we, Dave? Preston 1, Watford 5, Worth, great goal by Will Keane, actually, in that. That is the real quiz. Sheffield Wednesday 1, QPR 2, Southampton 4, Blackburn, sorry, what did I say, Joe?
You said Sheffield Wednesday 1, QPR 2, but it was...
My bad, Sheffield Wednesday 2, QPR 1, thank you. Southampton 4, Blackburn 0. Certainly the most sort of happy team, I think, in the top four until Leicester play tomorrow night, maybe, was Saints. They are 14 undefeated. Swansea 1, Middlesbrough 2, and another playoff team today, not in... such good form as when they gave us a bit of schooling, but it was West Brom 1, Stoke 1. David Diamond, who would you like to pick out from the Championship weekend action?
Yeah, I mean, you said Southampton, probably Leicester would be quite pleased about those certainly those two results there, as they've got Birmingham away tomorrow. And then, unfortunately, when we're going toe-to-toe with Leeds, I think they've got Rotherham at home. it's just how it is. Yeah, I mean, the Leeds one was, I was watching, the old Gillette Soccer on Sky, and Leeds, you expected them. Leeds, I think Somerville scored 66 or something like that, maybe a bit sooner than that. Perhaps that's when Coventry equalised, and you think, oh, yeah, here we go, they're going to go on. They should expect, go on to win comfortably. And then sort of, I think it went for a break, came back, and I said, hang on, did that say 1-1? And fair play held on. I saw the highlights last night. Dan James missed an absolute sitter right near the end, about 3 yards out, just somehow put it wide. We all said before this 8 games, didn't we?
The hateful 8, Dave, as I've branded
hateful 8.
Now.
I think me and you went for 12. Joe Welsh, he went for
21. Joe went for bloody 21 or something.
I think I went for about 18 or 17, did I, maybe? Yeah.
Me and you went for 12, and we're now on 13. So we've achieved something there. And I think if you'd have said, you know, coming up to this Leeds game, that we would be 10 points ahead of Leeds in second, I think, yeah, we'd have been all very, very gleeful. So despite the narrative and the, you know, the three games in the week, the 7 points, yeah, in an ideal world, you'd have liked a win at Borough, a draw at Watford and a win yesterday. But look, we'll take them as however they come. So, yeah, that was a, bit of a shock result there. And Leeds must be feeling a little bit like we were with Sheffield at times, with Sheffield Wednesday and Plymouth, you know.
Agreed. I think Daniel Farke said exactly the same. I listened to a bit of his pre-match, that they were virtually at 2 points per game, Joe. But listen, we'll talk about Leeds a bit more in a little bit. Guys in the chat, just as Joe is getting his views in on the round 22 results, if you want to get your questions in and you want to take us back to the Norwich game, please do. I am going to try and avoid that goes into the bracket I was talking about at the top of the show. So, Joe, what was your take on the round 22 results?
Yeah, just sort of similar to Dave, really. We're almost in a 4-team league at the moment, aren't we now? Just with Leeds, Leicester and Southampton. And like I say, we've got such a big gap. And when we talked about this 8-game run, we've extended our lead at the top, sort of in second place since the start of this run, which is incredible, really. And we're not going anywhere this season, are we? We are there to stay. And I say, we'll know even more by the end of next week, or sort of by end of next Tuesday. We'll see where we are. But we look like, well, we are the real deal, aren't we?
Yeah. I hope that to be the case. Right. Get your questions in. Stick a Q in before it and a question mark afterwards. You're very well trained, you lot. Carnivore Nation, we're going to answer that when we talk about Leeds in terms of the back four then. So we will go, Norman always upholds the standards of good questioning, doesn't he, Dave? Last season, Plymouth's easier running contributed to them finishing as champions. How does the running compare across the top four sides? I've had a look, Dave. I believe Southampton have all three sides to play in the last 10. And I think I'm right in saying, if someone checks me in the chat, it's Leeds Southampton round 46, Dave, possibly.
Ouch. And we've got
the battle for third place.
And we've
stop it, Joe.
And so after the next few weeks, we'll only have Southampton at home to play. Well, I'd say, sorry, disrespect to anyone else, but of the top four, we'll only have Southampton at home to play, won't we? Which is when? Is that April? Or sooner than that?
Let me just bring it up on another screen, because it is worth doing this kind of long-term look to know it. So after we get Leicester out of the way in January, there's Sunderland at home. It'd be interesting to see who the Sunderland manager is at that point. Then it does look all right. I'm scrolling down. I'm not seeing stuff that's massively terrifying. Then, though, Dave, you're right. April, Easter, Southampton, Norwich, Watford, Middlesbrough, Coventry, Hull. So April doesn't look... to be honest, it's quite a tricky run-in. But, Joe, perhaps that sort of February period is where you can maybe put the hammer down and... you know, we've been there before. I always remember Bradford. I used to look every week, Paul Jules Bradford. Just kept themselves at arm's length, didn't they, Joe?
Yeah,
and that run, you look at sort of like about an 8-game stretch and you think, really, the toughest couple of games are, well, the hardest teams, they're all at home. And it looks like a run where you could go on a sort of run where we've been on, where you win 6 or 7 out of 8 there, doesn't it? And if we have another run like that this season, like, you've got to get promoted, aren't you? If you have another seven wins in 9 games, you've got the other sort of basically 18 games or 15 games to pick up about 15 points, basically.
And this is the standard. We haven't actually, we haven't put the table up yet. We will do that. Joe's is Rob. How do we resolve our conceding goals issues as we're a mid-table team in the goals against column? I don't necessarily agree with your premise there, Rob. I don't think you can be a mid-table team in the goals against column, because obviously the goals for column has to work in. But I'm being very pedantic and I take your point there. Surely, Joe, it's just a balanced thing, isn't it? And that we're so attacking that you're going to concede. But maybe Rob is right that we could be doing a bit better.
Yeah, I think maybe set pieces haven't been defended as well this season. And I think we've got away with it a little bit up until now. But generally, the way we play very attacking. Like our left back is a left forward for a lot of the games. And we go man for man at the back and you rely on those winning their challenges, making their chances. And I think we have been a bit unlucky with sort of some of the goals we concede. Like yesterday, sort of two goals that very easily could have not gone in, sort of not happened. Potentially both were offside and stuff. So I don't think it's too bad because we can keep clean sheets and defend well when we try to, but we set ourselves up in a different, effectively, style to do that away from home as opposed to at home.
Yeah, I'm almost with when you concede from a long throw, I'm almost like anyone can concede from a long throw, can't they? It's just concentration and, you know, if enough of them get bunged in. Gary, Dave, did the three subs on 90 give us a chance of a winner or did it disrupt the team and confirm the draw?
Yeah, I just don't think, you know, in those last 10 minutes or even after, 10 minutes certainly, since we made the subs, we didn't really, well, other than the Broadhead chance and the save, we didn't really create a lot, did we? So I don't think they had, I don't think they had any really impact. I don't think it totally disrupted the team too much, I don't think. Yeah, I think he's probably got a point. Probably just did confirm the draw.
Yeah. Neil, I think we're talking about Alan Nixon's... Who's he with, Joe? Is it The Sun?
Yes. Yeah, The Sun.
Alan Nixon from The Sun today, I think he's on his Patreon, quoting a £3 million, 15 grand a week budget for a striker, which seems terribly specific and... unfortunately, as much as that would be life-changing money for all of us doing this podcast and most people listening, doesn't actually get you that much at the top end of the championship, does it, Joe?
No, unless you can sort of unearth a George Hurst again from somewhere else. I'd say you look what 3 million has bought teams around us in the league and it's not a huge amount. But I'd say there's a few questions about transfers in there and it's just the January approach. But I just don't see that we don't really attack this window in January because we're in such a strong position that how many other times are you going to be 10 points ahead of third place going into the January window, just needing to do what you need to do to get over the line? Kieran McKenna should be writing a shopping list and Mark Ashton should be going out there and delivering it for him because we're never going to have a better chance than to get promoted than we do this season.
Someone said in that Telegram chat, so what, 3 million, 15K a week? That's probably Colby Bishop. Is it?
Yeah. It's someone of that sort of level.
Jamel Lowe, maybe. Quite like him.
I do. Yeah. Everyone, the problem is, we said it at the live show, everyone's looking for Marcus Stewart, though, aren't they? They want that magic signing that just makes the difference, you know.
But obviously, Marcus Stewart did get us over the line, but he wasn't really a great signing in that promotion running, did he? He scored in his first two games. He didn't score for about 12 or 13 games after that.
No,
he obviously did the important thing.
In the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah, obviously did the most important thing in the playoffs and was brilliant in the Premier League. So I'm not sort of saying he wasn't a good signer, but it's not like he came in for a massive fee, scored us 12 goals and pushed us up. It almost disrupted the team more than it pushed us on.
Arguably, sort of signing like Rooster actually got us over the line, didn't it? So, you know, someone like him, you know, a crucial goal he scores against Fulham, goals like that.
But that £2.5 million we spent on Marcus Stewart then, that's £15 million now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that was that. I guess that would have been a club record back then, wouldn't it? So, amen to that. We talked about this a bit. Chris, how important will the missing players in January be for the top four sides in comparison? And you're talking about, obviously, Morsi for us being the big one.
Now, Morsi's not going to go, though, is he? It's going to be Luongo and Burgess.
Okay. And Wilf Ndidi, Kelechi Iheanacho for Leicester. And Ndidi's very good, but Leicester are so well stocked, aren't they? For Southampton, Sulemana. I'm trying to think who else. Honestly, I don't think it's a massive deal for any of them, I have to say. And anyone could lose a really vital player to injury at any point anyway. And that's saying Adam Armstrong for Southampton or a Dewsbury Hall for Leicester or, well, Leeds have got about 17 forwards. But I know, say Leeds have lost Byram, as we'll go on to talk about, if Leeds lost a centre-back, for example. So I think it's one of those things. I think because everyone knows it's definitely going to happen, I think people, I'm not saying Chris is fixating on it, but people sort of fixate on that.
Wasn't there a big concern about Morsi that I read that Arteta was saying that Elmeny's picked up an injury, a hamstring injury or something?
Yeah, but it does just seem that Morsi is just a way down the list with Egypt. He was called up to the sort of the preliminary squad all those times. He then once got into the main squad, played a few minutes, and then has not got into it. And you'd imagine the friendly squads are bigger squads than the tournament squad by probably three or four players, and he can't even get to that. So they've obviously got some. Maybe we should just go and scout the Egypt national side, because they must have some cracking central midfielders if they're keeping Sam Morsi out of the team.
Honestly, I thought yesterday might have been his best game of the season. I thought he was great. He was outstanding yesterday.
And do you know what? As well, Dave, talking to Jack on Talk Norwich City from the outside view, everyone thinks he's this kind of Pirlo type perfect midfielder. Kieran McKenna has turned him from basically a championship. You know, how he's so revered from people.
Outstanding. Did Jack say that? Did Jack say he was head and shoulders.
Yeah, it wasn't Leif Davis or Broadhead
I spoke to a Middlesbrough fan last week, and his view was the same. He just said like he was the head and shoulders best player on the pitch, and when he was at Middlesbrough, he never thought he always liked him when he was at Middlesbrough. But he said he never thought in a million years he'd be as good as he is now. Like I say, it's coaching and it's
responsibility,
learning. It's him. He's got to give him so much credit for taking on that coaching. And it's funny because Paul Cook had Lee Evans and Sam Moyes as a midfield pairing at Wigan for probably 100 games together. They came in, and within a week of being here, Kieran McKenna just switched their roles around straight away, and it just worked instantly. And it's like Paul Cook had those players for 100 games, like three, four seasons, and McKenna seen something straight away and turned Moyes into, well, just the absolute heartbeat of our team, isn't
it? He is. Yeah.
100%. Let's give the Hobbs 89 some credit, because I think he said he's a Norwich fan, behaving very, very well in the chat, come to join us today. Who do you make your favourites for fifth and sixth, assuming top four cemented? I think this raises another question, Dave, as Joe pointed out about a kind of four team, you know, sort of unit at the top there. There's a drop off after the top four, isn't there? But
it'd be very interesting to
see who Sunderland get in, won't it?
It will.
They're getting in Michael Beale,
is that going to happen?
Yeah, it's as good as a done deal.
Yeah.
He was at the game yesterday.
Yeah. They're very inconsistent. I mean, West Brom, after I saw West Brom play us, 3 weeks ago
they
looked the real deal and, absolutely bullied us, didn't they? And I really thought, they would be pushing for that top four. But again, look at the runs and Zen, really, really inconsistent. So
I had Middlesbrough there as well.
I'd say
West Brom and Sunderland would be my two.
I think West Brom. Hull are hanging around. I mean, Watford.
And also, I was just going to say, Dave, don't you think Mr. Ilicharli, if he's anywhere near the playoffs at Hull, is going to spend a load of money in January, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I thought they looked very ordinary against us, but And as we said the other night, I was quite impressed with certainly a few of the individuals that Watford had, and obviously Preston are in a terrible run. I mean, they turned them over royally yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see where Watford are come, over Christmas and next sort of three or four games. I thought they looked pretty good.
Let's have a look. Sorry, I've just scrolled down. It's an interesting question. Moby. Joe, are we making too much of Flagkey's distribution? Would Walton keep the goals tally down in terms of improving that defensive area? It's a fair question.
I don't think so, no, because when you look at the sort of goals prevented stats, I think Kladke's the top of the league for that. And whilst Walton got himself into a better position over that incredible run last season, at the end of it, sort of up until sort of the midpoint of the season, he was quite far down there. He was sort of below where he should be. And I don't know. I just think Hladke's been so good. And like I say, it's incredible, because if you'd have said to any Ipswich fan at the start of the season, Christian Walton's going to start the next 200 games for your club, everyone would have said, brilliant, yep, great, because he's such a good keeper and doing that. But now you'd almost be gutted to be in the starting lineup, wouldn't you, because of how good Hladke's been.
Well, not just that. Just think of the reaction we all had, you know, in that week or 2 weeks. Well, the week, was it the week leading up to the new season when he said he's out for two months?
There was people saying, oh, we should go out and sign in a keeper.
And let's face it, look, the first two names on the team sheet at the beginning of this season was Morsey and Walton, without a doubt. And now, arguably, it's Morsey and Hadley, isn't it?
Nathan Broadhead. Martin, thinking back to last January, were the four players who did sign linked to us at this stage, or did they come out of the blue? Well, Luongo was kind of training with us. We knew that was going to happen. They were a bit out of the blue, Dave, weren't they? But we had so much more power as the richest League One club than
yeah, we did. I think Broadhead perhaps came slightly out of the blue, didn't it? I don't think it was any secret we'd chased George Hurst. Obviously, Harry Clark, local lad. So, again, no great, well, I say local lad, but yeah, but maybe, you know, great surprise there. But Broadhead was one. I didn't hear any talk about him, did you? Can you recall that, Joe? I can't.
I think Jones didn't know on that, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, it came out in the papers, didn't it, that one, a bit before we signed him. But to be fair to him, I'd imagine he probably wanted to sign for Sunderland rather than us, so was trying to get that linked. I'd imagine his side were trying to get that out in the press to try and flush out any championship interest rather than dropping to League One, which is understandable, but obviously he's dropped down and is now higher than he would have been. He's gone there, so the move worked out brilliantly for him. But yeah, that was sort of out of the blue, but I think leaked probably by his camp. Harry Clark was probably only leaked because he seems to know half of Ipswich. That was sort of where that story was coming from. And, but yeah, no, they were all, like I say, George, as you said, George Hurst, we chased and chased, didn't we, in the previous window. So I wonder if there's any ones that we go back in for like that. So you're talking a Raksaki, maybe a Colby Bishop, I think we've been in for before.
Raksaki?
He's still at Palace, isn't he? He's not playing much.
Yeah, he didn't figure yesterday, did he? I don't think. I don't know if he was on the bench, but he didn't figure, I don't think.
There you go. Rich and Jacob, who did this in the summer, are drawing up a list of targets. So we'll do one of our transfer videos. Finally, and then we'll go in to talk about Leeds and have a bit more of a look ahead. Where was that last question I was going to put up? There we go. Joe, would promotion this season eclipse Burley 2000? I work with a lot of Town fans in Norwich, so genuinely curious. Of course it would, Joe, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like I say, we are a League One promoted team. There's only been one promoted team from League One finishing the top half for something like 10 seasons. If we were to go and win the league and to win or to get promoted automatically, we're going to be needing to get 90 plus points. So it's not like a season where you've got 84 and you've managed to get over the line. It's going to be a big points tally to get up this year. So, yeah, it would be an incredible. And I just think the Premier League is just so much bigger now, isn't it? And like, I noticed with sort of having young children, it's just like FIFA, EAFC, trading cards. The Premier League, it's just so big and we've got to be part of it. And once you get in it once, you're then in such a good position with the parachute payments from that point onwards.
And don't forget, Burley's team had, what, 3 or 4 goes at the playoffs leading up to that, hadn't they?
Yeah, to build that pattern of play. And, you know, as George used to say himself, and probably did in Craig's interview with him as well, by the time we got to the Premier League, we'd won a hell of a lot of games, I remember him saying. They knew how to win it at that point, didn't they? So the fun does not stop here, does it? It's now this huge, gigantic head-to-head between ourselves and Leeds. Let me just bring the table up, even though you all know it's a 10-point gap. But this is the way that it looks, he says. 52 plays 42 going into the halfway mark. So if we lose to Leeds at the halfway point, we are still guaranteed a 7-point automatic promotion. Can't believe after years, I've just had a moment. I can't believe after years of doing this podcast that I've just said at the halfway mark, a fucking 7-point, excuse my language, sorry, 7-point automatic promotion gap. Sorry, I just got us demonetized. I'm going to be in trouble in the WhatsApp group now, but I don't care. Unbelievable. A draw, and it guarantees a 10-point lead over Leeds. Obviously, Southampton look to be playing QPR, which they would be heavy favourites to win. A win against Leeds at the halfway mark, excuse me, having played them twice would then put a 13-point lead in over the Elland Road team with 23 games to play. Dave, we can admit that we like Daniel Farke. Now he's not Norwich manager anymore. Produced some fantastic football at Norwich, didn't he? Leeds have been in very good form. I did mention they're weak at fullback and have scored 1 point in two games since Sam Byram went out injured. Dave, the front four of Somerville, James, Rutter and Pirro have 49 goal contributions combined. So it is so blindingly obvious what the strength of this Leeds United team is. And this is a hell of a game, Dave, isn't it?
It's a hell of a game. I mean, look, we spoke a lot about pressure, didn't we, in leading up to the game this week, you know, the derby. All the pressure's on them, isn't it? All the pressure's on them, surely. They've got to. You know, really, they've got to win that game. They have got to win that game. So, you know, we can... It's just such a nice position. I think we said after the... well, certainly, perhaps after yesterday and how the results ultimately panned out yesterday that... Yeah, if it wasn't for the Leicester game following hard on the heels of it, it'd almost be a free hit for us. Honestly, it really would. So, you know, you'd think the pressure really is on Leeds. They have got to get a result there. And I agree with the comment there that a draw would be an absolute fantastic. And whether we'd celebrate it as long
Stop
as,
it.
but look, yeah, I certainly would. So. Yeah. Let's go there. You know, we've got a whole week to set up for it. Yeah, it's going to be an absolute cracker, isn't it? I'm really looking forward to it.
It's weird, Joe, isn't it? I agree with Dave. The Leicester game's almost an afterthought, isn't it? You have to just throw everything at this game, don't you?
Yeah, and it is the bigger game of the two, isn't it? Because ultimately they're the team that are trying to chase us, but. Yeah, the results yesterday just have piled the pressure on Leeds for that one, haven't they? We go there with nothing to lose now because ultimately, even if we do lose, and we're still 7 points ahead of them, aren't we? It might feel a big win to them, but I don't think it'd even knock us off our stride if we go there and lose. We're just in such a good position, and I'd say there's so much pressure on them. But like the sort of famous Mick McCarthy, you wouldn't even get on the bus if you could get yourself a point up there, would you?
I do agree with that.
Get off the bus.
Keep that lead intact. Dave, we've got a few questions. I think it's me and Rich on the preview on Thursday night. We've already had a few questions about the lineup and whether you tweak anything. Would be unchanged, Dave?
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. I saw someone to comment there. I wouldn't be surprised to perhaps see Twenzabi play, maybe. I don't know. He seems to be sort of rotating his centre backs fairly often now. I'm certainly with an eye again, as we all know that Burgess is going to be disappearing in January. So wouldn't be surprised with that. Other than that, I think the team everyone fit, no suspect. I think the team pretty much picks itself. Other than that, I thought Clark was very good yesterday. You know, considering we all said about, you know, the Williams Clark, are they both walking red cards? I thought Clark was very good yesterday. So yeah, he'll certainly keep his place. So the only thing I can possibly see is perhaps Twenzabi getting a start. Maybe Harness. I don't know. But yeah, wouldn't surprise me if that was the only change.
We tend to make the changes for the midweek games effectively, don't you? So I'd imagine we'd go Saturday with the 18, so to speak, and then make the three or four changes for the Leicester game on the Tuesday.
Rest some players against Leicester, for God's
sake. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, then back to that team for the 29th and then swap again for the Stoke game on New Year's Day.
Maybe.
I'd imagine that's what we'll see. But there's going to be a few players in there that play off. But I'd imagine maybe Luongo sort of out for Taylor. He tends to be the one that misses when there's three games in a week. Twenzabi will probably come in for Wolfenden in there. And then maybe a Harness or a Hutchinson will get a start as well. But yeah, I'd imagine we're going to be sort of keeping the same team for next Saturday. I don't really see any reason to change it.
Fantastic stuff. And we will be all over that on Thursday night. We'll be talking in far more detail about, yeah, a very exciting match, a very exciting Leeds front four, a very familiar opponent in the dugout as well. Let's just wrap this thing up then, Dave. We're in the Hateful Eight. We're six games in with 13 points. We're coming into Christmas. There is a sense of disappointment that we didn't beat Norwich, but this is brilliant. You will never work in a place like this again.
No, I think you're spot on, Ben. Absolutely, absolutely right. And, you know, if we can, I think we said at the start, you said 12, Joe said 16, whatever he said, if we can come out of these eight games with an average and 2 points a game, it would just be unbelievable. Really, really incredible. So, yeah, I think let's go to Leeds. Let's give it a go. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to this one. Do you know what? I wasn't really looking forward. I think I've seen a lot of this on our Telegram chat and stuff like that. I wasn't really looking forward to yesterday's games. It's so much hype. There's so much on it, isn't it? And I'm almost glad it's of course you'd like to win, but I'm almost glad it's out of the way. We didn't lose. We got a point. We haven't lost any ground to Leeds. Bring it on next Saturday.
Joe?
Yeah, I think across the next two games, if you can get either 2, 3, or 4 points, I think you'd be delighted. Obviously, six as well. Maybe more. But if you can get 2, 3, or 4.
Sorry to interrupt. To Dave's point, one win from those two games is your 16 from the eight, isn't it? Carry on. Sorry.
And that's incredible. And when we looked at that run, everyone would have bit your hand off a 16 from that eight. Even, like I say, if you get two, if you draw both those games, you get 15 points, I think you'd be delighted with that as well. Because at worst, you're going to be sort of 8 points ahead of second, aren't you? Ahead of third at that point now. So I just think it will be just great to see if we can just finish, well, just go through the next two games as well as we have the last six.
Well, and then look, QPR and Stoke in the next two are... and we're starting to come around for the second set of fixtures. The two teams we've already beaten, but are both going to have different managers than when we beat them earlier in the season. But we're going to be saying that for a lot of Championship teams this run-in. Can I already use the word run-in? Guys, thank you, everybody, for joining us live. Thank you for listening after the fact. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I did have a bit of a headache coming in with all of this, you know, throwing a pair of shoes over the office and, oh, they celebrated too hard. Oh, 14 years, blah, 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 bigger picture. Nobody won, lads. It was a draw. And as Dave says, let's shake hands and move on from that particular, I don't want to say circus, but it is a little bit with the local derby. And they can host the next one and all of that can go up the road to Carrow Road. Guys, thank you so much. Last word from you, Dave.
Just a quick shout out to my good friend of the pod, Mark Wall, who was
modelling the Blue Monday.
He was indeed, yeah.
We sent him. Fantastic.
Yeah, bless him. I popped around to see him on Friday and I heard he went in a hospital today. So, Mark, hope all's well and hope you're out and about in time for Christmas.
Amazing stuff. Joe, last word from you.
Yeah, if you want to see the real winners yesterday, just look at the league table.
He's waited 59 minutes to get that in. And I will say thank you all for watching. We're going to see you on Thursday for the preview show. And if you don't tune into that for the first time, we'll say this year, happy bloody Christmas to you. This has been a Blue Monday podcast.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.